We continue this morning with our series called This Is Why Not, Finding Hope and Resilience in Troubled Times. We've been talking about the issue of despair, of losing hope. The Netflix series 13 Reasons Why addresses that. The death of Project Semicolon founder Amy Bluhl addresses that issue. The study that came out earlier this year that discovered that there are a number of white middle-aged Americans dying what is termed deaths of despair. It's easy to focus on the bad stuff, the troubles, the things that are going wrong. If you focus on the good stuff, you're naive or perhaps you're foolish, but it's the good stuff that makes life worth living for most people. So how do you learn hope and resilience? Can you learn skills? Can you build emotional muscles that will help you bounce back when life gets you down? That's what we're taking a look at this week. Mary McClernand is the manager of adult behavioral health at Essentia, and she's our guest in the studio this morning. Howdy there, sunshine.
Good morning, Lisa.
So today we're talking about it. And I know that we've referenced this before, but the characters, all of the adult characters in 13 Reasons Why are cartoons. Mm-hmm. The parents are so clueless, so out of it, that they're not even like real people. They're, you know, the even the school counselor is really callous and doesn't really listen. And of course, there are parents that are clueless and there are school counselors that aren't good. But I think as a rule, kids in particular, let's hope, have people in their lives who listen. They have better relationships with the adults in their lives. But of course, you can't have a show. There's no drama if people say the truth and if they speak what's really going on. The drama comes from the keeping secrets and the I can't tell anybody sort of thing. And if you carry that over into your real life with the idea that I can't talk to people, I have to keep this a secret, whatever it might be, my embarrassment over this thing that happened to me or my grief over the loss of a friendship, that sort of thing, that's where the problems come in. So if we don't have a pattern in our family of talking about stuff and being open about stuff, how do you get started as a young person? And how do you have a sense of where the people are that you can talk to?
I think this is a great question because I think that both parents and kids struggle with that. And I think one of my favorite stories about how to manage that better is I found that when I picked up my teenagers from practice every day, if I just sat quietly and listened, suddenly they might start talking. And you would hear things that you would never have heard if you'd asked questions because you didn't know what questions to ask. So a really big piece of this is to just start listening and to be present with them at times when it makes it possible for them to speak. I think for kids, the big question is, how do I talk to my parents about those kind of tough issues? And I think for a kid, what you want to think about is, you know, try and be calm and approach them in a really kind of a beginning way. So maybe it's starting to say some personal things about things that happened at school and testing the waters, you know, and getting that, you know, today something really tough happened with a friend in the lunchroom and here's what I did. And just giving your parents kind of a window open to what's happening for you. So when there's something even really more terrible that you want to talk about, that window is already kind of a little bit ajar. And you can have that space to say, can I talk to you? I've been feeling kind of bad and even kind of depressed, I think. And I really think I need to talk to someone about that. And you can start with that parent because you've opened that relationship. And for parents, it's that idea of being open, being just listen.
Some of the things that they use in a drama, frequently one of the things that they use in a drama as, well, I can't tell so-and-so because they'll freak out. Mm-hmm. And then they tell so-and-so and so-and-so freaks out. And maybe sometimes as adults, we need to watch our behavior, not only with ourselves, but with other people. Do we freak out when somebody says something? Do we get so caught up in our own reaction that we don't pay attention to what the person needs? So when somebody says, yeah, I wanted to tell you, but I knew you'd freak out. I mean, can you look at yourself and say, honestly, Yep, I do that.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really huge. I think as parents, we hear that and we immediately go to the worst case scenario. These are our loved children. Oh, my goodness. And instead, we need to really calm down and just start asking questions. And I think some of the questions that can to know what to ask is really important.
Right.
And maybe it's just being really open to whatever possibility might be out there. For example, maybe you say to them, what could I do to help you relieve some of that stress that you're feeling? Or what do you think might help you feel better? What could you do for yourself that might help you feel better? Maybe you ask, where are you getting your support? Do you need me to find other support? Can I be more supportive? You could say, you know, I remember when I felt like that, and you won't always feel that way. That can be comforting. If you've been through something that's very similar, ask them what time of day is hardest for you. You know, sometimes our kids will, you know, just like giving this small thing. I know of a person who told their mother that the morning was the hardest time. And this was actually a person who was away at college. And mom was wonderful. Mom decided that she would call every day in the morning and just say, good morning, sunshine. How are you doing? And just checking in at that really hard time of the day. And that helped that person get up in the morning and get on to class. And suddenly it wasn't so hard because they, even though they were away at college and felt alone, they weren't really doing it alone anymore, that trying to get up out of bed. So asking people, what's the hardest thing for you? And how can I help?
One of the things that I also kind of poked around and discovered was this project with peer educators, and I mentioned this project with peer educators where the kids tried to identify five safe adults. Mm-hmm. And you and I talked about this a little bit. We started to brainstorm, you know, five safe adults where the kids might be able to find. And it could be a teacher. It could be a coach. Or a theater director, band director, whoever it might be. It could be a parent. It could be your own folks. It could be a parent of a friend. Mm-hmm. Sometimes
a neighbor.
Sometimes you get along really well, you know, better with the parents of your friends than you do with your own parents because it's not their job to tell you to straighten up and fly right. So, you know, they might, a neighbor. And of course, you know, maybe a school counselor is a great person, or you've got a teacher or somebody that is
a great
person.
Or maybe grandma or grandpa, because they're a little bit removed from that emotional angst that we as parents feel. They can kind of be a little bit, step back a little bit and be a little less emotional right away. And
again, it isn't their job necessarily to be a disciplinarian and stuff as much as it is to just love the daylights out of you and spoil you, if at all possible. So,
but I love that project you're talking about, because I think it's really important for all of us, kids or parents or any adult, to think about who are those safe people and to kind of start cultivating those relationships a little bit, even before we may need them, to think about the fact that, you know, here's someone that I value and I'm going to put a little bit of extra into that relationship. I'm going to make sure to stop by and see them once in a while. So we keep that going. It takes a little bit of work. It takes a little bit of thought to build those relationships up so that they're ready for when you might need them.
As an adult, you can, I suppose as anybody, you can also try to work backwards. If somebody called me in the middle of the night, how would I respond? If somebody called me in the middle of the night, who are the people that I would definitely take that call from, or I would jump up and go and be there? If you say, oh, anybody who needed me, and then you say, well, who would I call in the middle of the night? And you say, nobody. Well, there's a little bit of an imbalance maybe going on there, too. And how do we work on, you know, adults, I think, have internalized more. They've had more time to internalize do's and don'ts from wherever. And maybe you've got somebody in your life that you know could really maybe benefit from talking to a therapist. But there's no way they're going to make an appointment to go in and talk to somebody at this point. Mm-hmm. So how do adults who need to talk to somebody start to scope out where they may have support? And, you know, you and I have talked about this, that it's harder to make friends when you're a grown-up. You feel kind of stupid, actually.
It's much harder. I feel like many people make a lot of those friendships while their children are in school with other children.
Right.
And then you become friends with the other people's parents. And that's much harder when you're past that phase. And, it is harder. I think there are some really good resources in our community, actually. There's some different support groups. NAMI, for example, at NAMI.org. You can look that up. But we have some local support groups that NAMI sponsors. where people can just show up and just talk to some people and see, you know, maybe the first time you go and you just listen, but it's a place where you could go and talk to people who will support you, who will be supportive, who will be kind. And so it's, I think that's sometimes a way to look for that support. I think sometimes people have their spirituality might be linked to an organization, and many organizations have some kind of support like that. And it's worth asking if there's a place that you go.
If your church or your faith community, you know, if maybe sitting in church, you feel like I'm not meeting anybody necessarily, but frequently, you know, you can find a faith community that has a lot of other activities going around or some volunteer activities. And if you can volunteer, it will also give you the opportunity to connect with somebody on this thing that you're passionate about.
Wonderful.
And that may become a friend that you find that you can lean on. As adults, I think, too, frequently we jump to telling other people things and assuming a lot. And if we, I loved what you said about asking questions, but also, you know, and letting your kids talk, but about asking questions. If we say in a conversation, if you pretend I'm going to do an interview and you just ask questions of somebody, mm-hmm. it's amazing the different person that you get to talk to.
Right. And I think that's so important. I think of yourself as being like curious.
Yeah.
Because I think we can never, even if we have depression ourselves and someone talks to us about their depression is very different than our depression. And the same with our children or anyone else that comes in and says, I'm depressed. It's not going to look exactly like ours. And I think it's really helpful to just be curious. What does your depression look like? How does it affect you? What helps it? What doesn't help it? And just being really curious. And that makes that possible for the person to really feel heard and to feel your compassion that you have. And it also helps you figure out what will help them.
Finally, I'm horrified that the older generation, of which I am a part, has embraced the smartphones to the extent that we have, because we are worse a lot of times mm-hmm. than kids. How do we break our smartphone addiction in the sense that we don't look at each other anymore, we don't mm-hmm. talk to each other anymore, and as parents, we're horrible. We're talking to our kids, we're going, and we're staring at our phones.
Right. I think you've got to put your phone down. I think that it's really helpful if families have a rule, at least certainly over a meal table, to say, no phones at the table. At least that conversation can happen. But if someone comes to you and is talking to you about something really important, to really be conscious of putting the phone down. Because we'll hold it in our hand, even as though it's like a,
a little
toy.
little security blanket.
Put the phone down. It's really symbolic, actually, of I'm here to listen now. I've put my phone down, I think, in our culture now. That's important. You put your phone down, it means I am here and ready to listen. And so be really conscious about that and about how the phone interferes. I think even when I go back to my first example of the children in the car and listening to them talk, I think it's important that their phones are down too. And so we need to talk about that and say, you know what, while we're in the car, let's all put our phones down and just, you know, tell me about your day. Just
and
be
the
open.
Friend that you get together with and have mm-hmm. coffee to do the thing where you put the phones in a pile and the first person who reaches for their phone is the one that has to pick up the check or something. But to say, no, I can take an hour out of my day and I can talk to my friends
yes.
and not share my phone.
Yeah, what a wonderful thing.
Wow, cool. We should have coffee sometime. I'll check my phone and see if I have availability. Mary, thanks so much for coming in this morning.
Thank you,
Lisa. It's great to talk to you. Mary McClernand, our guest this morning. She's the manager of adult behavioral health at Essentia. Our series, This Is Why Not, Finding Hope and Resilience in Troubled Times, continues this week here on Northland Morning.